We've all got to take a good hard look at how we numb people, keeping good people numb. And then those of you that are using sedation, just the importance of how the numbing plays into the role of good sedation and keeping people good and sedated.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder. Pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the millennial dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. Yeah, don't look now. Back on schedule. This episode will be slightly lighter than the last episode. I think it was worthwhile and good. This episode, I touched on our last episode that I want to talk about something simple like numbing and anesthesia. So this one's going to be a little clinical, but let's jump in it. Clinical dentistry, sedation, numbing. Some of the things that I would say I probably take for granted that are so impactful on our day-to-day practice. So here's the deal. So what happened, remember, that what I was telling you about is I had had one of my associates numb for me just because I was behind and I was needing some work. And you know, when you think about it, this episode's for two people. It's for you, those of you that are dentists, dental students, associates listening. It's just about like how I think some important things that you want to make sure you're doing. And then for the owner doctors or doctors who have associates, I think this is a great episode for things you want to be not taking for granted or touching base on. So one of the things that like my dad was really good at when I graduated and joined the practice was he didn't really take things for granted that I knew how to do them. There was a lot of like checking. So like, you know, in dental school, I graduated and I was told that basically septicane will kill people, for lack of a better term. Like if you use septicane and you block with septicane, they're numb. They're numb for eternity. Turns out you can numb with septicane and block people with septicane till the cows come home. And I'm pretty sure that they're absolutely 1000% fine. You know, and so part of that's like you learn from like your experience. Like my dad had been practicing dentistry for 25 years at the time. It's like, I've only blocked with septicane for 25 years. There's no paresthesia. And you're like, that's interesting. I wonder if maybe this is overblown or not overblown. And then, but you know, every dental student comes out, they're like, can't numb with septicane, can't numb with articaine. Nope. Got to use Lido. And so there's a lot of things that I think are, I'm not trying to get into like a literature battle or whatever. I'm just real life talking with you because at the end of the day, like I frankly, as a wet finger clinician, as they say, what a terrible term, by the way, I'm going to coach more off of real life experience than what is done in a lab or what is done on a one-off basis. That's how I tend to live my life. So things I say are based off what I've had experience doing, not once, not twice, but that I've worked in a growing, scalable practice. So I just need to preface that. So that's something I took for granted. And then when I was learning, you know, our daily end of day routine would be like, or a pre-op routine, like, here, what are you doing today? Walk me through it. What's your plan? You're doing a filling. Okay, you're going to prep the tooth. Then what are you going to do? You're going to put the band on. Okay, then what are you going to do? You're going to etch. You're going to etch everywhere. You're going to select the etch. Like, what's your process? Okay, then you're going to rinse it, then you're going to bond. How are you doing your bonding process? All right, you're going to fill the box. What are you filling the box with? Is that flowable, packable? It was a lot of like word vomit conversation of like what you're doing, how you're doing it. Now, this wasn't necessarily like dedicated coaching time. This was like why I'm a group office believer in the office of like what I got going on. Now, dentists getting out of school, learning this stuff, you've got to be open books. So much of my success is that I was willing to be like, you know what? The guy's done it for 25 years. Maybe he knows something. Maybe, with all due respect, Crotchy Crotch Crotch, who's teaching me in dental school, who hasn't practiced in 20 years, maybe things have changed. Like, with all due respect. And so like, I had to start being open to that idea. Now he's my dad, so that helped. And so we would kind of do this. And so I would start to learn things, but like, well, man, I thought that I should prep this way, but like, you know, he keeps telling me that I need to take more off the tooth. My restorations keep being thin when I mill them out. Then my bites are high. Maybe he's on to something. Maybe I under-reduce. Maybe like little things like this were part of our daily conversations. As you practice, so much of those things take for granted. How I prep a crown, how I reduce, how I numb. Those are things like you take for granted. And they're things like you kind of expect that someone's going to graduate. But you got to go back to remember those things that you graduated with. All these like dental school isms that aren't necessarily real life how you practice things. And you can't just like, you can't just tell dentists like this is how you do it. Because like that's not fair. Like that's what they've been taught. So there's got to be conversation and both parties need to be willing to accept that like, hey, this person's been doing this for a while. Maybe they have some advice and maybe, just maybe, there's other ways of doing it than what I was taught in dental school. So that kind of sets the stage for some of this conversation. So I have my associate numb and I come in there and I'm like, is he numb? And then my assistant's like, yes. And I go, well, how many carpals did he use? And he said, four. And I was like, four carpals of what? And it was like septocaine. So I was like, well, at least we're on that world, he's there. Like if they had said lidocaine, I would have like shit a brick. I don't know. So at least we're numb and or we're perceived numb. And I was like, well, man, four carpules to numb an entire upper arch. Like he could be great and maybe did some blocks or something, but like that's not like I have trouble believing that like this is a true profound numbness or anesthesia that's going to maintain throughout probably a 2-hour process or longer, given that we're going to 3D print temps. That becomes the concern. And then I started thinking like it got my wheels turning, because then I was like, some of these docs also tend to use more sedation drugs than I use. And I'm like, man, I don't think I'm getting patients that are easy to sedate. I mean, my typical patient is someone that's medically compromised. They're getting all their teeth taken out and they're getting 6 to 12 implants placed in their jaw after some bone reduction. Like I probably have the job that requires the most sedation meds, whether it's oral and pills or whether it's Versed and fentanyl. Yet, if we looked across the board, relatively speaking, I'm not sedating the hardest, quote unquote. And it got me thinking about, you know, I bet what's happening, and I've said this before, that the biggest thing that kills sedation, that kills comfort, that slows down a process, a timeline, is patients being good and profoundly numb. And profoundly numb is the key word there, I think, profound, in that I believe that like you can give someone half carpule and get the job done, but I don't understand, is there like an anesthetic shortage out there? Like, I love you all, but like who's dumping half a carpule and it's stopping? Like, this isn't gonna hurt someone. Like there's no risk of like danger here. And we're talking about just dumping a full carpule versus a half a carpule, you can save it for later. I mean, we can't use this on the next patient. So it was just kind of funny things like, oh, I dumped 3/4 of a carpule. And it's stuff that like I take for granted, because I guess just ever since the beginning, like I was like, well, if I'm going to put a carpule in, I'm going to put the whole carpule in there. And I've watched it happen. And I've seen it happen both in educational settings. I've seen it happen with our associates, is that when we lose the numbness, when they start feeling stuff, this, you can pump people with all the sedation drugs you want. It doesn't move the needle. It won't overcome pain. Pain kills you. And so my messaging here is those of you that are doing sedation, and if you think about, gosh, I feel like, man, I'm using a lot more sedation, or I'm struggling to get these people sedated, then I want you to strongly take a internal look at your numbing protocol. And I mean this like, this is where you got to check your ego. Because some of you have been practicing for 10 years and you've only done restorative dentistry, or you've done like mainly bread and butter. Now you're getting into more of a surgical realm. And guess what? It's probably possible you did fillings and some crowns on some teeth that were not fully profoundly numb or not numb at all. And, you know, we blamed it on them being a redhead, or we blamed it on like they just burn anesthesia fast. It's like, no, you probably just freaking missed the block. I love you all. But I'm just speaking the truth. And then what happens is then, because we have 6 doctors, so like if someone gets numb, like they don't just keep trying, like they'll come get somebody and someone else will numb, and then all of a sudden they get numb and it's like, yeah, you probably just missed, or you weren't giving enough, or you're using lidocaine or a seat nest, something like that. So anywho, so when it comes to numbing, just to get really even more clinical, our protocol in our office is we use 27 gauge long everywhere, 27 long everywhere. I despise a 30-gauge needle. It's my pet peeve. Here's why. When we talk about the two types of pain that happen when you're numbing somebody, it's twofold. It's one, it's the insertion of the needle into the soft tissue. Number two is when you inject the pressure and the acidity change within the soft tissue causes a burning and pain sensation, right? So these two areas where we cause pain. Topical will help the first one a little bit, although I don't use topical. I think topical is ridiculous, unless the patient's like, I just want the topical because they've been subliminally ruined. I believe that you can create enough vibration, you can be quick with the needle in and decisive, and that is basically non-existent if done appropriately, the insertion of the needle into the soft tissue. This idea that a 30 gauge is going to be less painful than a 27 gauge, that is like backed up by literature that a patient cannot tell the difference of a needle going into soft tissue. That's the difference between a 30 gauge and a 27 gauge. That's crazy. So I don't buy that. And now we talk about where I think the real pain happens, and that's in the injection process, is that does it hurt more if you inject fast or slow? Well, the answer is very clear. If I push the anesthetic in very fast, it hurts. If I go super slow, it doesn't hurt as much. Why? Pressure in the way that gets processed. That's why the 30-gauge needle is worse. And the analogy that has always made sense to me, that I just don't know why it's not talked about more, is if you take a water hose, water faucet, spigot, I don't know what the freaking, whatever you call it, based off where you are in the country or world, and you just hold the water hose, and then you let water come out, it has a certain level of force. If I put my finger over that water hose, what does it do? It creates a significant amount more pressure on the water coming out. I have not changed the amount of water coming out. The hole's just smaller. So when you go from a 27 to a 30 gauge, what does happen is the needle's smaller, the hole's smaller, and so the pressure that's coming out of it is going to be more. And so this idea that we're helping people, in my opinion, is not true, and that I'm a big 27 gauge long fan. It's also a scale thing. I can use a 27 gauge long for everything. Outside of the instance I need to do a PDL injection because I got a super hot tooth that's abscessed, right? And if you're not watching this on video, I'm doing this in quotes. Because again, I think we love to, I'm not going to call this doctor out, but we were doing a surgery last week and we were numbing up a lower arch and he started feeling it around number 30. And he goes, I think it's a hot tooth. Must be a hot tooth. And I'm just like, internally, I'm like, hey, this ain't a hot tooth. We just missed. You missed your block. You infiltrated some. You've been able to get so far. And then you get to a tooth that's actually difficult to take out. And they're feeling it, not because the tooth's hot, but because it's just not a good profound block. I'm not saying that there aren't some instances where there's a significant amount of affection, but we love as dentists to use all these things to bail out when it really is probably that we're just missing the anatomy. Or we're not using enough anesthetic and we're not getting a good profound numbness. So, 27 gauge long, septicane, 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 septicane. That's what I use. And then I use a good bit of marcaine. So if procedures are going to be longer, I will also load in marcaine, bupivacaine, so that I get some level of longer acting numbness. Because once you start to lose somebody, it's harder. Especially in a surgical setting when you're raising flaps and you're reflecting, it's very difficult to find where they're not numb and get them numb mid-surgery. Your ability to get them numb on the front end really, really well is very, very important because once you lose them, it's very difficult to get them back. And then once you lose them, you lose your sedation and you can't just overcome that with more fentanyl. It doesn't work like that. You'd be shocked how well oral sedation works with one or two triazolams, how little Versed and fentanyl you can get away with if you get the patient good and numb. So it was a takeaway that like the reality is the last couple associates we brought in, these are things that I take for granted that I haven't talked about and I assume. And shame on me for not, again, setting the time aside to coach them, to talk about them, and to say, let's walk through a dental appointment, a basic appointment like a filling. Walk me through step by step what your process would be. Because the reality is if it's a single crown, I probably use two carpules of septicane. I bet you most all my associates probably use one. And guess, well, there's no difference in the physiological impact from the standpoint of one or two, but there is a little bit of real life reality that like they don't hit it the first time all the way, they get it partially. And so like, therefore it's not a super profound numbness. So those of you who are like, well, I can use one carpule and get somebody totally numb, you probably can. And by the book, you can. But in real life, that isn't necessarily scalable. So That's the approach that I look at, especially as you start to look at that. And I'm probably just not as good as you. So I just have to throw it, you know, you throw enough darts at the board, you'll hit the board. Anywho, I hope this is more of you find some humor in this, but I also hope you find some, maybe some reality checks or a little bit of like poking the ego a little bit. And that I think we've all got to take a good hard look at how we numb people, keeping good people numb. And then those of you that are using sedation, just the importance of how the numbing plays into the role of good sedation and keeping people good and sedated. So we've had some follow-up conversations that have been good around this, and I think impactful. And so go back, ask these questions, and I hope you enjoy this episode on numbing. Look at me getting clinical over here. Work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.